Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
This hour is sponsored by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Affordable implants, life-changing smiles.
Adam Hoag says...
Adam Hoag, Bears Insider.
What's up, everyone? My name's Adam Hoag. This is the CHGO Bears Podcast.
Host of the Hoag and Johns Podcast.
I've said this a few times. Ben Johnson does not seem like a first-time head coach. It's just like that's not the vibes that we've had with this coaching staff coming in.
Adam Hoag.
Adam Hoagie or Hoag? Excuse me, I don't know how to pronounce the last name.
On 670 The Score.
It makes me laugh every time I hear it, but we know his name is actually... Adam Hoag. He is half of the Hoag and Johns podcast. It is on CHGO. And he joins us via the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. CircaLasVegas.com is your listening to a Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing and Electric Football Friday. It is presented by your local Ford dealers. Adam Hoag, thanks for joining us. And now we, I think now we know. We'll play off of Robbie Triano's Open a little bit that indeed... Ben Johnson did seem a little more like a first-time head coach when we saw what happened on Monday.
Yeah, I still maintain that behind the scenes and in the building, he still comes off as a seasoned guy who's already gotten the command and respect of the players and everything. But yeah, there were moments on Monday night in that first game where, yep, yeah, he did look like a first-time head coach. I thought the revelation even in the moment I didn't mind the challenge because it seemed like the ball was punched out without any type of contact on the player. But when you later hear the rule that, you know, you can't try to take the ball out, any action trying to take the ball out of a player who's down on the ground deems that player down. Maybe that's not a rule that we all should know, but when you are the head coach, when you are one of 32 in the NFL, you should at least have a guy up there that knows that rule and tells you. And evidently, based on what Ben Johnson told us, he was being told don't challenge that, and he went against that. So at least that's how he relayed it to us this week. And if that's how it went down, then yeah, I think that was a good learning lesson for Ben Johnson in his first game. You got to trust those guys.
Yeah, and Adam, I believe that's the thing to be the most optimistic about when you're talking about going from week one to week two, is that there's a learning curve for the head coach who has proven at every level, every stop, and in his resume how smart he is. And so the belief is there that he will be the one, even if his players aren't ready to get where he wants them to be, he will make the adjustments internally to get where he needs to be as an NFL head coach, as you said, one out of 32.
Yeah, I mean, when you have a coach who's willing to point out his own mistakes and, you know, in that case, even offer up something that maybe not the rest of us all knew in the moment, you feel better about that coach's ability to adjust and fix those mistakes. And that's who this guy has been since the start. I probably have said this with you guys even at some point in the summer or maybe even last week. Like, okay, let's see what this looks like, though, when you start losing games. Because that's the ultimate test. That's when you really get to know who these guys are. And I think this week it's just one game, but we've seen a couple of things. I mean, we've seen some honesty. We've seen him protect some of his players, including Caleb Williams at times, depending on what the topic is. But we've also seen him not be afraid to call out Cairo Santos on his performance, but also take accountability for the fact that they, as a coaching staff, they should have elected to just kick the ball out of bounds. So he's put plenty of that accountability on himself, too, at the same time. So if this is how it continues, I think that puts you in a better position to handle adversity, to handle some losses, to handle some of these problems that we might continue to see here for a little bit at the start of the season.
Adam, do you think that you just brought up a great
topic, and that is the coach protecting the player, which happens all over the NFL. We've seen it with many predecessors. But do you think Ben Johnson was protecting the quarterback, Caleb Williams, when he was talking about some of the pre-snap stuff and the play calling, which Ben Johnson said, I got to call better plays to make it better and maybe easier for Caleb Williams?
Yeah, well, and that's, Gordy, I think that's my takeaway is that he's done a little bit of all of it. And what I mean by that is let's look at the delay of games, right? He said one of those was on him, that he had to get the call in faster, so they had to burn a timeout. Then he said the second one was on Caleb because, you know, they put the dish man in motion too late and they had to burn a timeout. Otherwise, that would have been a delay of game. But then he also said, you know, when it comes to the pre-snap penalties, it's a little bit of all of it.
Right.
But I think as long as a coach, as you're doing all of that, if you're sometimes calling out your players, you're frequently calling out yourself for your own mistakes, and then at times you're also getting a little coach speaky, but it adds more credence to the idea. Yeah, I'm sure that some of these pre-snap issues are everybody. I think a lot of it's Caleb, but I don't think all of those false starts were Caleb. I think there was at least one, probably the Darnell Wright one, I think is the one I'm thinking off the top of my head, that was just an offensive lineman jumping off sides, and that happens at times. So it is, no one wants to hear, oh, it's a little bit of everything, but sometimes it is. It just gets kind of annoying when that's all the coach says all the time, and he never really gives you specific examples or any type of blame on anyone, including himself, and we've seen too much of that in the past, so that's where Ben Johnson continues to be refreshing.
I agree with that, Adam. This segment with Adam Hogue is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today. I think what Ben Johnson does a really good job of to that point is he is okay with talking about the stuff that either the league already knows about his offense or what he likes to do or what they know about the Bears. He's not afraid to say, oh, that falls under scheme, when it clearly doesn't. And again, you know, the other team actually has to stop it physically if they want to do so. Like that has been really nice to hear a coach teach, not just his team, but us as well.
Well, right. And I think an example of that would be, you know, DJ Moore in the backfield in training camp, right? Like that could have potentially been something where you're like, hey, that's not on film yet. Everybody needs to be quiet about that. It needs to be some big secret. And instead it was like, yeah, We want to get him some looks at running backs. A running back, we like his skill set. And then sure enough, in the first game, they put him out there for a few carries. And we'll continue to see that evolve. I think that's just Ben having some confidence in what his system is, what he's able to do, what he's already accomplished in this league. Maybe that confidence straddles that line between confidence and cockiness a little bit. But that's okay. I think a lot of football coaches, I think a lot of players straddle that line all the time, and that's why they're successful. So, yeah, sometimes this is a league of paranoia. You guys all know that. Sometimes these coaches get way too paranoid over too many details, and they spend too much time worrying about that they're wasting their energy on that when they should be wasting their energy on just, you know, their opponent or what the game plan should be and all this stuff, instead of worrying so much about what they're hiding. Just move forward full steam ahead. And I think that's what Ben Johnson's been, and I hope that's how it continues.
Adam Hogue, the host of the THGO Bears and the Hogue and Johns podcast, joining us on Raheem and Harris with Mark Grody to talk about the Bears and the Lions coming up on Sunday. And looking at that injury report, it's real easy to get distracted by what's going on with the Bears. But to see Taylor Decker, the left tackle, not having practiced all week, do you feel like this is something that Dennis Allen could take advantage of after a strong, well, three-quarter showing in the week one loss?
Yeah, the whispers from Detroit seem to be that this is kind of planned for Taylor Decker, and that he'll probably still be a go Sunday. Again, we're talking here on Friday morning, so the final injury report with the injury designations haven't come out yet. We'll obviously continue to monitor that. I'll shift over a little bit more to what I do know, and that is, I think the Bears have a pretty good advantage here on the interior of this offensive line for the Lions. I think, you know, while the Bears beefed up their interior of the offensive line by making a bunch of additions, the Lions are really in the position they're in just because of the subtractions they were forced to make. They lost Kevin Zeitler, went on to Tennessee. Frank Ragnow retires, and now they're even in the summer, they were mixing and matching and trying to try things out. Graham Glasgow ended up moving from left guard to center. Christian Mahogany is now the left guard. Tate Ratledge is a rookie at right guard. So they also, like the Bears, have three new starters when you consider Glasgow moving over a position, but it's for very different reasons. And I thought that coming out last week against the Green Bay Packers, they struggled up front. And even though the Packers didn't have Kenny Clark out there anymore, you couldn't really tell because those linebackers like Edrin Cooper were coming in free, making big plays. I think that's if TJ Edwards can play, I think that'll be big too, because it's not always just about the defensive linemen up front, but how clean those linebackers are running through there. Are they capable of reading their keys and using their eyes to hit the hole hard and make the tackle? Well, if TJ Edwards plays, I think up front, the D-line already has an advantage against those three guys for the Lions in the middle. And that's not something we've been able to say in this matchup in recent years, because that Lions offensive line has been awesome. But they've taken a step back this year. Obviously, Penei Sewell's still out there on the right side. We know that. It's going to be a tough matchup for the edge rushers. But I think on the inside, the Bears have an advantage there that could really make a big difference in this game despite their own issues, because it was glaring on the tape. I watched that Packer game live, and then I went back and watched it, and it just sort of confirmed on the coach's film everything I thought I was watching live on the TV copy, because it wasn't great for that offensive line for the Lions.
Yeah, no doubt about it. This will be 2 weeks in a row where the Bears go up against an offensive line that has an all-new interior. Obviously, Minnesota upgraded their interior, paid some guys, so it's a little bit different in that case. But, Hogue, I checked you guys out. I like to check you guys out on CHGO. I like to dabble in your post-game show, you and Carm and Braggs, and I know you guys have John's on as well. You did a good job reacting to what went on special teams and Cairo Santos and some of the coverage issues, like the initial reaction. What now, having listened to Richard Hightower, the explanations that were given, and the errors that occurred, what is your opinion of what can be fixed and what went down and what sounded good and what sounded bad from Richard Hightower?
Yeah, I mean, I think that even just watching the film, the easiest thing on the punt block is to point out just the protection error, right? I think not to sound like a coach all of a sudden, but I think there's a lot of different issues going on there that led to that block punt. I mean, one is just a straight up missing your block. That's never good. You can't have that happen. That's going to usually lead to a block or a close block. But you could sort of see it coming throughout the game. I don't know that any of those reps up front, you're really happy with the protection, because it seemed like the Vikings kept getting closer and closer and closer. And so you have to make adjustments there too as a coach. So that's where then I think some of the coaching comes into it as well. That's the type of thing that you have to be able to make in-game adjustments when you see a punt almost get blocked, or you start to feel the pressure coming. And that could also be just the way in which you call your punts, you know, calling something else to try to get the heat off. There are things you can do to prevent that punt, basically put the Vikings in a return instead of a block. And then I also, you know, I think we need to continue to track with Torrey Taylor. Is he getting the kicks off fast enough? Is it the snap? Is he taking too many steps? I don't know that it's really any of those, but these little milliseconds matter, and they all sort of end up adding up to a block. You know, you got to hold that block for half a second longer. The snap needs to be a little bit quicker. The get off on the kick needs to be a little bit quicker. All of these things matter, not only when you're punting the football, but also on field goals. So, yeah, there's just, I think, a lot of small things there that they have to fix across the board, both in their coverage units. I wasn't particularly thrilled with their returns either. I'd like to see Luther Burden, if he's not going to touch the football more on offense, I think he's a weapon they can use on punt return and kick return. Yeah. And I want to see more of that, because he got one return opportunity last week and he killed it. He crushed it. Everybody ignored it and forgot about it because it was right before halftime and it didn't matter. But that I would lean into that a little bit more. So I think there's a lot of things across the board in all phases of special teams that can be better this week.
Are you worried about Cairo in general? like that Santos, like he okay, it was just a bad game for him, or does there need to be serious conversations?
Well, what I'm worried about is that both of those kicks drifted to the right. So even that first field goal, you didn't feel great about it, even though he made it. And so you could sort of see it coming when he actually missed it, and the ball was a little bit farther back. So, but I'm a little bit surprised. So yes, to answer your question, I'm a little worried about Cairo. I'm surprised I'm worried about Cairo, though, because at no point in training camp was I worried about Cairo.
Right,
I mean, he seemed to be just going about his business and everything was fine. And maybe there was one miss here or there, but it was quickly corrected. There was no sign in camp to me that this was all of a sudden going to be an issue in the regular season. So, look, he's an experienced kicker. I think he can correct whatever it is. And sometimes kicking's a lot like golf. When you have the option on the PATs to switch the hash or move it to the middle, you can do that. You can set up field goals that way in the right moment in a game. So there's just little tweaks you can make to get back on track. But I am slightly worried. We got to make sure that this isn't something that continues on, in week two and week three.
Well, we have some breaking news. Breaking news on the Score is brought to you by Wildfire. Join Wildfire Restaurants as they celebrate 30 years of serving delicious food and creating memories. Funny you bring up Cairo, because we just got this in from Jordan Schultz, the Schultz report on X, NFL insider for Yahoo Sports. Former 49ers kicker Jake Moody, according to sources, is signing with the Bears practice squad. Adam?
You know, when I saw that they moved on from him, and he's the former Michigan kicker, if I remember it, yeah, he was a third round pick just a couple years ago. So he was one of these kickers that was pretty hyped up, not unlike Torrey Taylor coming out as a punter. And I saw him them move on from him, and I'm like, I wonder if they would think about that. Just think about it. Sometimes everybody needs some competition. But Moody's also been sort of all over. You know, he's been through some of his own struggles, obviously. Lance Briggs, who's with us at CSGO, he jokes around all the time about free agent kickers. If a punter, like if a punter struggles, oh, that's a free agent punter. Because his point is, if you're a great kicker or a punter, you're never available as a free agent. So you got to keep that in mind here. I'm assuming this is just a little bit of a push to Cairo Santos. I'm not terribly surprised about it, because we all saw how annoyed Ben Johnson was after the game. And even on Monday,
Hogue, I heard you say that on the post game show that you guys did, that you were spot on. Like, it was in his voice. Like, he didn't tear him up, but you could just hear it in his voice.
You could just hear the annoyance, right?
Yes.
You could just, like, and I think I also made this point, like, of all the players that you can get annoyed at as a head coach, it's the kicker. It just is. There's just this sort of like meatball-y,
yep.
Dude, just do your job. Come on, just kick the ball. You shouldn't be that hard. You know, whether that's fair or not, it's probably not. It's just for these football coaches, that's just sort of ingrained. It's so easy to get annoyed at the kicker. So, hey, here's some competition. It's interesting.
Adam Hogue, we thank you so much for joining us. And yeah, there's one job there. He's of the Hogue and Johns podcast. You can hear it on CHGO. He does a lot of work for CHGO as well. And Adam's segment is brought to you by Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric. For all the right reasons, call 866-4-SEASONS.
Thanks,
Adam. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks, guys. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, Grody just starts playing during the interview.
Because the bringing in a kicker competition. I'm doing my own drops over here now. So when
That's crazy.
I was waiting, when I heard something controversial today, I was going to play the uh-oh song.
Well, what are you going to do for Joe Ostrowski? Have you thought about that yet over here, sound machine?
I better not play anymore.
I got it once I realized what you did.
Did you write that down? Oh, you did get it. Okay, good. Okay.
Well, we all got it.
Robbie needs to write it down.
I thought it was pretty good.
We'll parse this through with Joe Ostrowski and get you ready for a big weekend of college football wagertainment and NFL as well. We'll do that next with Joe O on Rahimi and Harris with Mark Grody. Uh-oh. On the Score.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Joe Ostrowski, host of Bet Sweats on the BetMGM Network.
That's a lot of value on a very talented team.
Getting you ready for your wagertainment weekend.
The public's been killing the books.
Joe Ostrowski.
Oh, yeah, he's got a lot of Herbert Hoover in him.
We couldn't live without Joe Ostrowski.
On The Score. Score.
I think Hawk was right about that. We can't live without Joe Ostrowski, and that is why he joins us now here on Rahimi and Harris with Mark Grody to get us ready for the weekend of wagertainment. There's a lot happening. Joe, I actually want to start with what was a fairly boring college football slate last week. Well, that script has been flipped. There are some exciting games. What do you think of the weekend?
Yeah, we do have a couple of exciting ones. Miami, South Florida, surprisingly, jumps out as one. Tennessee, Georgia for some SEC action. That's a couple. Let's start with the Miami one. So South Florida has kind of been like the Cinderella story. We're just a couple of games in, but people are talking about them. You take down Boise and now Florida. Well, they're betting Miami. I think they're saying it's going to be a dose of reality. I would agree with that idea. The public is betting South Florida. I would be on the Miami side just with the talent difference there. 17.5-point spread there. Tennessee, Georgia. The bookmakers are saying everybody's betting Tennessee. The public, the sharp guys are betting Tennessee at home as a dog against Georgia. And neither team has played anybody, so sometimes that's a challenge at this point in the season. But Gunnar Stockton been anything but impressive so far. So I think they're betting against Georgia on the road. And the most popular bet I saw this morning over at BetMGM, the entire slate, all the games, Oregon minus 28 against Northwestern.
I am completely with that. I am putting my money on Oregon, my actual personal funds on Oregon. I believe they will win by at least 30 points.
Okay.
What are you talking about? Okay, Joe. Tell me something I don't know, Joe.
Okay. When I see this on the schedule, it just makes me think. 9 a.m. body clocks, Evanston, like we see once in a while, just slow starts, maybe a lower scoring game. I'm not saying that you should be scared about Northwestern. That is not what I'm saying at all. The twos and threes on the Ducks will probably crush the Wildcats, but sometimes take it for granted. Maybe they don't show up.
the twos and threes.
The way you laid that out, like second half, will those points continue to pile up? That's really what you're saying, right?
Yeah, so I guess I'm giving you more confidence in your wager, right?
Yeah, no, I like that specifically when you're looking at the slate and that Tennessee-Georgia matchup. I feel like we're going to learn a lot about the SEC as a conference in that game, even though they haven't played anybody yet. The winner of that game would seem to be to have pole position of some sort.
Yeah, for right now, but you know how it goes. They're all going to play each other. They're all going to have a million ranked games. I'm keeping an eye on Oklahoma. They look good early on. The schedule is soft until they really get into conference play later on. But, you know, if they take down Auburn next week, I believe it is, they could easily have a 5-0 start and maybe the favorite for the Heisman.
Oh.
I also think, Joe, this is a good time to point out now that it is a very likely scenario that a 3-loss team not only makes the playoff, but advances. Like that's something I think we need to wrap our heads around, is the concept of not even just 1 or 2 losses, but a 3-loss team.
Yeah. When you have the mega conferences and you have tough games every week, nobody wanted to hear it last year when it was Alabama, right? People were laughing at Alabama. Okay, they're out. No, 3 losses, you're officially out. But yeah, maybe we're going to end up having those conversations because there's going to be some really good 3-loss teams, especially in the SEC.
I want to talk about last night, Joe, because Packers were like, is this for real? The Commanders are actually supposed to be a good team. I'm starting to believe in the Green Bay Packers, and now I'm looking at the futures market and everything else.
Yeah, so does everybody else. This is overreaction week, and what we are seeing on Green Bay, It's like they're saying, okay, it's over. Green Bay Packers. They are now the best team, according to the betting market, in the NFC. They're the favorite over the Eagles. They have leapfrogged the Eagles at least momentarily. That could change after, of course, Philly's game up against Kansas City. They are now the third favorite for the Super Bowl. Third favorite. They have shorter odds than Philly and Kansas City. And Jordan Love is the third favorite for the MVP.
What?
It's Josh Allen, stop. Lamar Jackson, and Jordan Love. That's where we're at. I'm like, come on. This is going to go haywire at some point. But look, if you go... We're going off of last year for the most part as we're figuring these teams out. Week one, the Lions, expected to be one of the best teams in the NFC. We'll learn a lot more coming up this Sunday. And then you take down the Commanders, another team that was supposed to be a contender in the NFC. We'll see if they are. Two of the better offenses in the league last year. It's been super impressive. They get Cleveland next week. Their record is going to be very strong when we're sitting halfway through the season. I don't agree with them being the third favorite for the Super Bowl, but people are not sitting back and waiting and see how it works out with Parsons. They're acting immediately, and they think the Packers are in that elite group.
Yeah, well, they have looked good. I'm not ready to put them in the Super Bowl by any means. Joe, the Bears are at the Lions this weekend. What are you thinking about that game?
So before the Bears game on Monday, the line was Detroit favored by 4.5. And then they watched the Bears game, and now the Lions are favored by 6, 6.5.
Yeah, of course.
Uh-huh. Yes. So, I understand where they're coming from as far as that goes. Look, I think a lot of people are looking, nationally I'm talking about, they're looking at this Detroit team and saying, okay, they can't be that bad. We've seen what they've done over the last couple of years. This is the ultimate bounce back. They play well at home. Indoor climate for Jared Goff. This is going to be a different team. I have had my questions about Detroit all offseason, and I've not wavered on that. I don't know if John Morton is any good at his job, if he can replace Ben Johnson as the offensive coordinator. We have questions on the defensive side. You guys were just talking about the turnover on the offensive line for Detroit as well, an offensive line that was considered, you know, easily top three, maybe the best in the NFL over the last few years. No run game to speak of. Everything on that Lions offense goes through the run. They couldn't get it going last week. 2.1 yards per carry. So now they're favored by 6, 6.5. And this is a team. We've seen it in the past when Justin Fields was here. They've struggled with mobile quarterbacks. And Caleb looks to be that dude so far. Maybe a little bit more than I was expecting. I think the Bears can hang, but I understand why people are saying, no, I trust the Lions to bounce back, but you're talking to someone that has a lot of questions about Detroit. Now, we'll see what the final injury report is, but getting 6.5 points in a divisional matchup when it looked like the Bears were going to take out the Vikings, I would look to the Bears side this week.
Our segment with Joe Ostrowski is brought to you by Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric. For all the right reasons, call 866-4-SEASONS. And we did get this update, just so you're aware. Joe, Lions coach Dan Campbell, this is from Brad Biggs, told reporters in Detroit that left tackle Taylor Decker will miss his third consecutive day of practice today. Mm-hmm. Campbell said, quote, he'll be ready as long as it feels right. So that could possibly be a game time decision.
Give me the Lions 0-2, please. I want to see his reaction then. Him at the podium.
With that same reporter asking him the questions. I have more questions for you, Mr. Campbell, if I may.
Yes, yeah, especially if the Bears defense shows up. And I'm interested in, you talked about the game at large, but I was wondering inside the game, whether it's the over-under or some of the props maybe that interest you from that contest.
Yeah, so far this year with our small sample size of 1 week and a game, it has been about the unders, guys. 13-4 to the unders. It's been low scoring. The Bears, Vikings was one of the few overs. It's been a lot of primetime games that have gone over. Of course, Sunday Night Football, that awesome Bills Ravens game, that went over the total, but it's been low scoring to start. The way this game sets up, I would, in the controlled environment, I would lean on the higher scoring side of things. I could see it going back and forth.
Not just your belief in Caleb Williams and to throw for 300 yards? No?
I'm not. You calling that?
No, I'm not. I just just throwing the bait out there for you.
I think you did
talking
say
a lot. Yeah, you've made a lot of points.
You did say 4,000 yards though, didn't you, Marshall? I can't remember. Yeah, our predictions.
It's 234 game. Yes, he will average that over the course of a season as long as he stays healthy.
Okay.
That's what I said, Joe. That's what I said. They're giving me grief about that.
It's Marshall math.
He should get there.
Thank you.
You don't sound that confident.
You didn't sound very confident when you said
it,
though.
No, I don't. Can we just go off the script the entire game? Then we're going to get there. We're going to get to 4,000, 5,000.
Script the hell out of that thing, man. Just script. Anything else you're hot for in the NFL, Joe?
As far as the Bears, Zaccheaus, 7 targets last week. His receptions number is 2.5, so I think that's certainly a fair look. Chiefs. Eagles, everyone's going to be watching this late afternoon on Sunday. 69th home start for Patrick Mahomes.
Nice.
As of right now, it would be the second time he's an underdog. The Eagles are actually favored in this game. I was not all that impressed with them. Another change at OC. I didn't love it. They went to Hurts in the legs every time they needed something against Dallas. I would look to the Chiefs side in this one. And the most popular bet, they're all taking the Eagles. Everybody's betting the Eagles this week. So that jumps out for sure.
They should have Jalen Carter. So I think that's going to change it quite a bit for them.
Yeah. We'll see. Chiefs at Arrowhead. I kind of throw out the Brazil game. I don't put too much into it. But yeah, I thought that was funny with the NFL. Oh, wait, he served his suspension. Yeah. One of the biggest games of the year, of course. You're going to make sure that he's available there. Jacksonville, +3.5 at Cincinnati. The Bengals should have lost last week. They always have slow starts. I think it continues there. And I like Pittsburgh defense to bounce back. They're favored by 3 against Seattle. Give me Tomlin against Sam Darnold every single time.
That means the Steelers start 2-0, too, and that is significant.
What does that mean?
Oh, I'm getting way too close.
That's money in the
bank. Way to Mark Grody's total for the season, because he's talking about 6 wins for the Steelers. Like, okay, Mark, be as disrespectful as you want to Mike Tomlin. I hate to
switch gears.
It's
Aaron Rodgers I was being disrespectful towards.
I just have one more question about baseball futures, because I did put good money, solid money, first half of the season on Cal Raleigh. Where are we at with that AL MVP race?
Oh, AL MVP. See, that's what's so interesting. So Schwarber, he's past the 50 mark, and you just look at it and you see these guys that have hit so many bombs this year, and right now neither of them are favored to win the MVP. Schwarber basically has no chance on the National League side, but the one that you care about over on the AL side, I think it's going to be close, but right now the favorite is still Judge.
Okay.
But it's probably going to be a very close vote. Yeah, it's going bigger and bigger. It's Judge -450, Raleigh +350. Let's see how many he ends up with, how many bombs at the end of the season. I think Raleigh has a chance, but right now the market is thinking Judge.
Well, Joe, we appreciate all of the discussion in wagertainment and I think a mini counseling session at some point during the plot twist of this segment. But Joe, thanks so much for being a part of it as always.
Have a great weekend, guys.
Thanks, Joe.
That was Joe Ostrowski getting us ready. And by the way, Joe hosts BetMGM Game Day Sunday, 7 to 10 a.m. right here on 670 The Score, getting you ready for your NFL Sunday. And Bet Sweats weekdays 8 to 11 a.m. on the BetMGM Network. Coming up next, it is a special version of Halftime. Mark Grody, how do you describe what you've collected for us?
Well, I spoke with Daniel Hardy, and the reason I spoke to him is because of that badass hit he made in the first quarter on special teams where he just leveled the guy, and like as if Soldier Field wasn't already at a fever pitch. So that was my reason to speak to him, but then it kind of folded into a little topic that was created by Daniel that I followed up on at the end. So I think you'll enjoy the substance and some of the little fun we had.
I love it. We'll do it next on Raheem and Harris with Mark Grody on The Score.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Mark Grody. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
What time is it?
It's halftime.
It is halftime here on Rahimi and Harris with Mark Grody on 670 The Score. We begin our show asking the question, what aspect of the Bears game do you want to see improve the most against the Lions on Sunday? Is it offense? Is it defense? Is it special teams? Is it the run game? We touched on quite a bit of it. We also did that with Adam Hogue as well. At 11 o'clock, Joe Ostrowski set us up for the weekend of wagertainment. Busy one in college football as well. And now it is time for halftime, where Mark Grody takes the floor.
Yes. It's halftime.
I would like us to keep in mind something that Layla just said as she returned with her food here. She said that she was going to run to the Zon. And I was like, what's the Zon? And she said, Amazon. So I was like, okay, it seemed like an unnecessary shortening of a word. So I just want you to keep that in mind, because it just happened. And now a conversation with Daniel Hardy. And the reason I wanted to talk to him was that sick hit he had in the first quarter on special teams, which everybody, even in the press box, like, ooh, like you just watched that. It's a football hit. Here's my convo with Daniel Hardy.
Oh, it's amazing. You know, AD likes to talk about DA, apologies.
ADDACDBB.
Coach DA talks about, you know, special teams being the first snap of defense. So just being able to go out there and set the tone for that drive and you know, especially after a, you know, score on offense and being able to continue the momentum is, you know, it's a huge thing. And, you know, it's just my way of being able to contribute to the team. The family group chat was going crazy. You know, lots of friends hit me up. Everybody's sending clips in the group chat. So it's, you know, it's nice, but, you know, would have felt even better if we got the win. I mean, I take pride in any job they give me, you know what I mean? So, I mean, it wouldn't matter if it was starting defensive end or starting water boy, you know, I'd take pride in everything I do. So I try and take ownership of that role and be the best possible special teams player I can be.
And why is everything initialized in this day and age? I'm Mark Grody, MG. You're Daniel Hardy, DH. Why do we do that?
I couldn't tell you. Less syllables, you know, more.
Lack of creativity.
You know, just efficiency. That's it. Streamline.
All right,
see,
MG.
Why it was perfect that you said that you had to go to the Zon?
When
you
said the Zon.
I went from three syllables to one. So.
That's true, yeah. So it just
I don't
so
know how
much
unnecessary
easier.
You thought it was.
No, we are in an initial world.
Do we prefer the initials or just the shortening to one of the syllables of a word when you're talking about shortening something?
Yeah.
Because like, you can go MG, or, you know, I say groats sometimes.
Right. And it's fine. To me, it's just funny. Who was it?
Did you bring up a hits or a loaf by chance?
No hits or loafs.
Interesting.
That's so last year. But talking to Roma Dunze about the St. Brown podcast, you know what they call the St. Brown's brothers? Like, Saint. What's up, Saint?
Just straight Saint.
Saint. I love that
for
one.
For each of them or both of them collectively?
That's a good question. Like Equanimeous and Amon Ra.
Because Equanimeous, that's a mouthful.
So is Amon Ra.
But they call him EQ.
True.
So EQ. That in that case, like a name like Equanimeous.
See?
Yeah, see? Like everybody is happy when you could, okay, we'll just EQ. I'm okay with EQ.
And you also inadvertently touched on something that I was reminded of. Like I came across on YouTube the best of the ESPN This Is Sports Center promos.
PTI.
And Adrian Peterson was on there.
AP.
And I would know.
All day.
That's it. So you said you were talking to Daniel Hardy about DA or AD as he was first called.
Right.
And the frustration that I held was that Adrian Peterson's original nickname was AD for all day because he can run all day.
Yes.
Somewhere along the way, it got Joe Theismann and changed to AP for Adrian Peterson. And I'm like, that's not even the original nickname. He doesn't even go here.
Wow.
Well, it's because it was a nickname to start with, and then they shortened the nickname as opposed to going off his actual name, and now you got AD. And that made sense to me because he was all day for so long. But you're right. Somewhere it got retconned to AP, and
it
I was like,
did.
Wait. Oh.
Hey, that's
okay.
Great. Then the Bears had a running back by the name of Adrian Peterson as well. He is now the actual AP. The Bears running back, who I think was like a sixth or seventh round. I don't even know if he was drafted. Maybe a seventh round draft pick out of a small school. So congratulations to the Bears, Adrian Peterson, AP, ladies and gentlemen.
Do we have a favorite shortened nickname as far as athletes go? Because I'll tell you what mine is.
A favorite shortened nickname.
like shorter than their actual
name. No, I know I'm going to have to think about it. I mean, Anthony Rizzo being called Riz isn't terrible.
Yeah.
And especially now that that word has risen to popularity.
You know what people loved? And I don't know if people love it as much in this world and our society and all of that, but Arturis Karnišovas being AK. People love that, AK.
You've got the Acme even.
Yeah.
Mark Eversley and AK.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't like that one. I do like that.
Because it describes the entire front office.
Yeah, kind of.
And they are in lockstep. I'll say this. Whenever I hear AK, I always think first of the guy who wore number 47 for the Utah Jazz.
AK-47.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And the fact that his nickname was so cool because he wore the number 47 and his name was AK-47.
And now it's kind of unstable. You can't love it the same way you used to.
Yeah, no.
Just like you can't put the gun on the jersey like the Colt 45s in Houston back in the day.
There's a reason the Washington Wizards exist.
And not the Bullets?
The anti-Bullets. Yes. They're the anti-Bullets.
Bullets is a pretty aggressive nickname when you look back at
it. In retrospect, yes, it is. So, yeah, like going around and thinking like, Bron is obviously one that stands out. Like LeBron James has just somehow become Bron.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which is like, you know, but you know who that is.
And then named a whole child after that concept with Bronny.
Yeah. Bronny James.
KMA.
There's a lot of cool nicknames out there.
Oh, wait. No, I'm thinking of one. It's an NFL player, three words or three letters.
Did you guys see the hit, by the way?
KMA.
Do you guys know what KMA is?
George St. Pierre is a good one, too.
Do you know KMA? No, I didn't know it before Grobber, so it's okay. Do you know what KMA is?
No.
Wow. Do you guys know what KMA is?
Oh, I know. Come on.
Right. Kiss my ass.
I don't watch KMA.
Wow.
I've never seen that typed out on a text. I've never...
score overnights. If you called into Les with some attitude and he didn't like what you were coming with, that's what you'd get.
You know what? KMA.
So on the text line, they're saying 219 Shaq, obviously Shaquille O'Neal.
Yeah.
Shaq is
MJ.
Oh,
815.
Yeah.
We all know who MJ is.
Oh, I think MJ is the clear number one.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
PCA.
PCA.
Now we're getting into it.
We're missing
layups. Yeah, we are missing layups. Totally.
The PCA one's funny because I saw the Taylor McGregor hit.
T-Mac?
Yes, T-Mac.
A-Rod, I hate to say it, but that's a pretty solid one.
Yeah,
and on Marquee, they were talking about the PCA nickname and how no one calls him PCA, but the origin of the nickname, a scout gave it to him because they were all at this baseball scouting event, and they were talking about that kid, Pete Crow Armstrong, and then one of the scouts just shortened it to PCA. And Pete was asked, does anybody call you PCA in your personal life? He's like, no, it's Pete or Peter. And I thought that was hilarious that there's not even a conformed, it's not everyone Pete or everyone Peter. Because usually a guy named Peter or Pete or whatever will tell you it's that and it's not this.
In my shorthand, right. I'll write down CSW for Caleb Williams just because that's his actual initials.
Oh.
Hey, what's the S?
That, I don't know. It's just what he has on his social media, so that's why I use it.
CP3, RG3.
Saquon. Saquon?
Yeah.
Sequan. Caleb Saquon Williams.
CSW. It sounds like a drugstore or something. Yeah, I'm going down to the CSW.
He uses it. Like a clothing store? So I was like, okay, I'll use it. I'm fascinated by middle names because I grew up without one. So.
Oh, I'm sorry. Layla grew up without a middle name. Aw.
Do you want one?
No.
Oh, okay.
I had one when I was married. I just moved my last name to my middle name. Oh,
the maiden name trick.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
My middle name is Edward, so when my brothers would get mad at me, they'd call me Meg, because, like, that's a girl's name, so they thought that was funny.
Meg.
Yeah.
Meg.
That is funny.
Yeah. It was very hurtful, actually, is what it was, Layla.
I get that.
Meg.
We're getting you ready for Cubs baseball here on The Score. Judson Richards has your pregame in just under an hour at 12:45. So let's fold in some baseball to 5 on it. We'll hear from Craig Counsell if we can, and also do some predictions. All of that coming up next. I'm Rahimi and Harris with Mark Grody on The Score.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.